did you make of the coaching job Nick Nurse did in the bubble?
Oh, he was outstanding, as usual. Thought he did a great. Listen, I don't think there is another team in the NBA that could do what the Raptors did this year. So win a championship, your best player leaves, no significant additions, like didn't go out and make a big free agent signing or anything else, and get to game 7 of the conference semifinals. I mean, that alone tells you what a great job that Nick Nurse did and the rest of the organization in terms of who they've drafted and how they've developed players and everything else. But I think that is a great testament to the Toronto Raptors. The fact that they pulled up short, I mean, is almost beside the point to me. What we try to do is build an organization for sustained success. And I think this year proved that this organization is doing that.
Stan, what was your takeaway from the 7 games with the Raptors and Celtics? What, you know, when you step back from that series and look back at it, what's your main takeaway?
Well, I thought throughout the whole series, I mean, I shouldn't be saying this on a Toronto station, but throughout the entire series, I thought just from looking at the numbers every game and everything else, it was clear that Boston was the better team. I mean, even going into game 7, Boston over the full 6 games had clearly outplayed the Raptors. So what you guys said, I think, is exactly right. The better team won, and that's what it came down to. What Toronto did a great job of was finding ways to just stay in games when they never really at any point in that series got it going. And got to give Boston a lot of credit for that, but Toronto just never hit a stretch where they just had it all flowing at like we had seen during the regular season. And for them to stay in games against a quality opponent, I thought showed a lot about the character of the team. But like the playoffs always do, they also expose areas where you're going to have to get better. And I think, you know, the one thing you have to be concerned about if you're the Toronto Raptors going forward is that Boston was missing a very significant piece in Gordon Hayward and yet clearly was the better team. So it's not just as simple as saying Boston was a better team. They were the better team, even without a 17.5 point a game scorer. And I think what really surfaced against a good defensive team like Boston is they, without Kawhi Leonard, this is where it finally came up. The Raptors don't have a go-to guy in the half court. And I think if you look around at all the other teams that are playing deep into the playoffs, they have that guy. The Raptors have 3 guys who are either all-star level guys or very close in Van Vliet, Lowry, and Siakam, but none of them are that transcendent half court. Give them the ball and they'll go get a shot on their own and certainly make their fair share. Toronto doesn't have that.
Yeah, it is remarkable, isn't it, Stan, that the way the game has evolved, it still gets down when you get to the playoffs. It still gets down to playing pretty good defense and having that guy who can, you know, having the guy who wants the ball, the guy that becomes the focal point. Still comes down to that, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And the Raptors have guys who want the ball, and they've got highly skilled guys. But if you really watch in the playoffs and sort of analyze what's going on, you need guys who not only can shoot the 3 and get to the rim, but can just go get a shot off the dribble. And even against good defense, just rise up over the top and knock a shot down. And obviously Kawhi Leonard, who you had a year ago, is at the top of that list. And the Clippers also have Paul George, and the Celtics have Jason Tatum, who can do that on their own. And to a lesser degree, Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward. And the Miami Heat have Jimmy Butler and even the young guy, Tyler Hero, who can just get shots over the top of people and knock them in. The Raptors have 2 great small guards, 2 of my favorite guys in the entire league. Highly skilled, tough, competitive, can get to the rim, can shoot the 3. But against really good defense that's longer, you saw some possessions where they had to take extremely tough shots down the stretch in games. And Siakam, that's not his game right now. I mean, as good as he is, an outstanding player and an incredible story of player development, you know, over the course of the year, he scores a lot in transition. That's going to decrease in the postseason, and it did. They weren't able to get out on the break against Boston much at all. He can get to the rim, and he can make an open three. That deserted him, obviously, in the series, but he can do that. But to just go take two dribbles and pull up over the top of somebody and knock down a jump shot, he doesn't have that right now. And that's something that either he's going to have to develop or the Raptors are going to have to find in someone else to make that leap back up to being a true championship contender.
Stan, how does Miami match up? And again, with or without Hayward in the Boston lineup? Because, you know, we still don't know.
I think that's a great matchup. I would say this. I would say that Boston has more length and are a little bit better defensive team. They're a pretty good shooting team, but I would say Miami is a superior shooting team. And I think that Miami's offense may be a little bit more versatile, basically because of the skills of Bam Adebayo. I mean, a great passer, but the difference even between, say, Bam Adebayo and a great passer like Marc Gasol is that Bam Adebayo can really make plays off the dribble at the center spot. I think that gives them an edge. They play the game with a little bit more movement off the ball than most teams in the league. They're one of the best, I think second best on the year in three-point shooting. And then they've got a guy like Jimmy Butler who can just go get his own and get to the free throw line whenever he wants and create his own shot. You know, Boston has that too with Tatum and Brown, guys who can go get their own shot. I think it's going to be a great series. If I had to bet, which I don't, I would probably give a slight edge to Miami only because Hayward's not, if he is back, I don't think we'll be at full strength. So I'd give Miami just a tiny bit of an edge, but the tiniest of tiny bits.
Hey, given, you know, the amount of time that Eric Spoelstra has been coaching in the NBA, where would you rank this job that he has done this year with this team?
Well, maybe as good a job as he's done, and that's saying something, mm-hmm. because I think for a long time he's been the most underrated coach in the NBA. Like, here's just a fact of life. If you coach LeBron, you won't get any credit for what you do. I mean, nobody has. Mike Brown got no credit coaching him. Ty Lue got very little credit coaching him. Frank Vogel won't get any credit coaching him. And Eric Spoelstra didn't. It's just a fact of life. Like, if you have LeBron, everybody, oh, he only went in because he has LeBron. As if nobody else has any players. Like, you can get credit if you're coaching Kawhi Leonard for some reason. You know, you can get credit if you're coaching Giannis Antetokounmpo. You can get credit if you're coaching Luka Doncic. But if you're coaching LeBron, you don't get any credit. And so the fact that Eric Spoelstra took a team to four straight finals and won back-to-back championships, people just sort of wave that off. But then if you really look at it, he was taking teams to the playoffs before that. And then this team, I think he's finally gotten his credit. But I think Eric Spoelstra is one of four guys, I would say, in the league right now who are sure, no doubt, Hall of Fame coaches. And he's done his usual great job. He maximizes the talent on his roster. He puts them in roles that work the best for them. And he always builds a team that plays with extreme confidence and, you know, with, for lack of a better word, swagger. I mean, they believe in themselves, and that's what he's developed again this year.
Just before we let you go, Stan, I got to ask you about the Denver, Game 7 Denver Clippers. You know, that it's the best. It's a crazy year, but this, you know, the best story of this crazy year in the bubble and all of that has got to be Denver. And Jeff and I were talking about it yesterday. Just, it's great to see a team that, you know, overachieves the way they do. It goes further than people think they are and doesn't just take the consolation prize, doesn't say, hey, yeah, we did it, and now we'll roll over and we're going to lose to the Clippers because they're going to win the title or they're destined to go to the final. It's been a blast, and it's kind of the reason you watch sports. What, you know, does the, you know, because the, can they complete the miracle here though? Because, you know, again, I and every other neutral fan in the world is rooting for him.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a toss up. I mean, I really do. I think it's 50-50. It's, if I were running the board in Vegas, I would take it off the board, the game. I mean, I really think it's a toss up game. It's been amazing to me what they've done, because my experience, even in a normal year, let alone when you've got a group of guys that have been confined to the bubble for two solid months, over 2 months, they haven't let go of the rope. Like, they were down double figures, well, more than that, 16 or 18 in the second half of game five, and they fought their way back. And then after doing that, to be in that same situation in game six, they could have let that game go and left with no criticism whatsoever. Everybody would have talked about him being down 3-1 twice. They would have talked about the game five comeback, and they could have left on a high note, and yet they didn't let go of the rope. They kept fighting. That team clearly, number one, believes they can win, and number two is going to keep fighting to do it. I think the Clippers, if they didn't know it after game five, you know, after game five, they sort of just got on themselves. Ah, well, we took our foot off the gas. It's more than that. I mean, that Denver team is good. I think the Clippers are well aware of that, and the Clippers are going to need a good 48-minute performance tonight to win. I don't think there's any doubt that the Clippers are the more talented team, you know, from 1 through 10, 1 through 12 on the roster. They're the deepest team in the NBA. They have the most weapons in the NBA. They can play both ends of the floor. They've got a tremendous coach. They've got all these things to where this should have been a relatively easy series for them, but it's not. So give the Nuggets credit, and let's see what happens in game seven. But I do know this, all the pressure is on the LA Clippers. Like, Denver is, you know, the proverbial expression is you're playing with house money. And Michael Malone has used that expression at least once in this series. And he's right. This team's playing with house money right now, and I think we'll see a great performance out of them again in game seven, and a very compelling final game.